The Monday Night Press Gang on City Talk 105.9.
And welcome along to Press Gang for a Monday night. It's where the assembled media from Merseyside get together and discuss the weekend just gone by. Tonight, as ever, we're joined by Alan Irwin of City Sport, Everton correspondent for us, and he's going to be here throughout the next hour. Dave Randalls as well from the LFC magazine, and also Dominic King of the Liverpool Echo. Good evening to you, gentlemen. Thank you for taking some time out of the busiest, probably the busiest day of the year for all of you three. I think I only realised it this morning when I switched the telly on and thought, I'm going to be popular tonight.
Indeed.
Thanks for joining us anyway. We will get on to that and obviously review all of the big transfers throughout the course of tonight, probably more so in the last hour as things try to hot up a little more. But primarily we'll be concentrating in this hour on the games from the weekend. Let's start with Liverpool first, because well, we might as well get it out of the way. It's probably the easiest way to describe it from yesterday. Not an action-packed game at Villa Park. Liverpool 0, Aston Villa 0. I suppose the only headline that came out of it worth talking about was the injury to Fernando Torres.
Injury to Torres, yeah. Or the return of Javier Mascherano as well, if we want to try and seek a positive from it.
I think outside the box.
That's probably it, yeah. Certainly outside the box, because there isn't much happening inside the box at the moment.
Pretty good again.
I think Torres coming off after, what, 27 minutes, wasn't it? You know, and you're sitting there and you're thinking, you know, where are the goals going to come from now? No Steven Gerrard. No Fernando Torres. We spoke to Alan Hansen this morning on the magazine. He said exactly that. You know, you're looking around and thinking, where are the goals going to come from? It was a chance you would have thought for Robbie Keane then, you know, to step up and come into the centre. But he seemed to be playing out on the left. It was a funny lineup, a 4-5-1. I've seen sort of one formation described as a 4-5-1 with Lucas coming in, and the midfield was just packed. It's the final third of the pitch again. There was no sort of end product in the final third of the pitch, that, you know, that final ball to the forwards, and it's easy to criticise Robbie Keane at the moment, I think, but personally I don't think Fernando Torres has been playing great either. You know, it's a lack of service to both of them. It's easy to pick on Keane because he's the new boy, costs £20 million, but Torres has only scored one goal as well this season, and you know, that says something as well, I think. Defensively, Liverpool, you know, they were fine yesterday. Obviously, the defence was the main positive from the game. That, and I'd say Mascherano coming back. But it's up front. That's where the question marks are at the moment.
I think from Evertonian's point of view, we'll move on to their game in just a minute or two. But that was probably the only decent headline that came out of the weekend for them. Possibility maybe that Fernando Torres will be missing for the Derby game.
No, I don't think he will be. I'm sure he'll be back by then, won't he? It seems to indicate there's only 7 to 10 days out of action, really. Miss the internationals, as Steven Gerrard will. But I have to say, the game bored me to tears. Liverpool were so negative. Robbie Keane, to me, you know, Liverpool have paid, what, £18-20 million for Robbie Keane. And he operated in a defensive left-sided midfield role yesterday, which I just think is so poor for the fans who've paid good money to go and see Liverpool, you know, attack and score goals. And as Dave said, you know, there's nothing happening in the box at the moment for them.
It was a very flat atmosphere as well at Villa Park yesterday, and that's always a game that Liverpool fans seem to enjoy. I think they're unbeaten there, and well, it'll be 11 after yesterday, but it was so flat from their point of view as well. I don't know who inspires the other, but it just wasn't happening yesterday.
Yeah, I think on the back of, you know, anyone who was at the Liège game in midweek, It's not panic setting in, but there is a concern at the moment. You know, Liverpool haven't performed well this season. They just seem to be getting some momentum in pre-season, and then the season proper has started, and they're yet to, you know, really put in a decent performance. Again, looking at a positive from it, they've got 7 points from 9, and they're not playing well in the league. They've just about scraped into the Champions League, so everything's on course, you know, on paper in black and white. But you know, if you sit down and dissect it and analyse it, there seem to be problems there. Okay, Benitez, he's Gerrard's missing yesterday. Torres has gone off, so he is compromised. But then I looked to the bench and I thought, well, who's going to come on? Who's going to take Fernando Torres's place? And Ryan Babel was there, but he's Babel's clearly not fit. He hasn't got over that ankle ligament injury, you know, that he suffered, I think it was on the eve of Euro 2008 with Holland. Holland came back, took him to the Olympics, and he's clearly not fit. So I think the manager just putting him on at the end, that sort of showed that.
I mean, what you've said there, Dave, just sums it up for Liverpool, really. I mean, if Gerrard and Torres are going to be missing for a number of games this season, Liverpool cannot surely be a threat to the other top three sides in terms of title aspirations if they are to rely solely on Torres and Gerrard, because what you're saying is the squad is not simply good enough to actually compete without those two.
It was something that Aldo brought the point up for, and he, you know, very straightforward on it, and said this squad Liverpool have at the moment is not going to challenge for the league. Simple as that.
Doesn't look good enough to me. I just don't see the additions that he's made over the summer. What is with just one question? Why do Liverpool managers over the last few years spend massive money on centre forwards and then play them as midfielders?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Kout was what, 9-10 million, and he's being played as a right midfielder now. Robbie Keane is a left midfielder. Julier did it with Elhadj Diouf, didn't he? So. Just lots of money.
Well, he's bought another 18-year-old today, so there I can stick him in the reserves as well. Another big striker.
It breaks your heart to a certain extent when you bring up the point of Dirk Kuyt. He's looking more and more like a right fullback every time you see him play. You know, you could never ever question his endeavour, don't get me wrong, but he's looking less like a right-sided midfielder now and even less like a striker. I mean, what's happened to Dirk Kuyt?
He's just being asked to defend more, I think, you know. Benitez or Rafa, he likes his players to, you know, to work all over the pitch. And in the case of Dirk Kuyt, you know, that was always what we were hearing about last season. You know, he worked so hard. I mean, we hear it all the time, you know, he's such a hard worker. I mean, great, but...
So is Robbie Savage.
Exactly. He was signed as a striker. At least Robbie Savage is or should be a midfielder. And you know that, you know, whereas Dirk Kuyt should be a striker. If you're looking, say, if Torres and Gerrard are missing and you're looking at other players to come in and score the goals, well, surely Kite's got to be one of those players.
What about Ryan Babel? Okay, Young and Gogg was given his chance yesterday, but you would have expected Ryan Babel to be introduced into the action as soon as Torres was withdrawn. Again, that's a bit of a strange one, isn't it? I know he's just come back from the Olympics, but he was back earlier than Mascherano and Lucas, wasn't he? So,
you know,
you would have expected Babel to play, and there's a player who was playing up front and scoring goals when he was... in Holland.
Yeah, you go back to last season, the game against Arsenal, Champions League second leg, and he came off the bench, and we saw it so many times with Babel last season, this thing about him being an impact player, but against Arsenal he came on, he played down the middle and he took them apart. He won a penalty, and then I think he scored the fourth goal right down the middle, and he has said himself he wants to play in that central role, but he's not getting a chance there. And Gogg came on yesterday, and to be fair, his movement looked okay. I thought, you know, his movement off the ball looked okay, and he looked quite sharp at times. But you're talking about a teenager, you know. He's only a couple of years younger than Ryan Babel, but it's a big season for Babel. You think this year it's his second season at the club, and it's whether he's going to get a chance. Is he still going to play on the left? You know, there's sort of a gaping hole there on the left. Rafa's in his fifth year now, and we still haven't got a decent left-sided player.
He looks so down as well last night after the game. You know, it was almost... I mean, I think Villa are so susceptible. People are talking about Villa maybe making that break into the top five after their sixth-place finish, but defensively they looked all over the place yesterday. Martin Larsson got the sponsor's man of the match, which told you really what kind of game it was.
Yeah. Well, I've seen that on Sky. I mean, I was listening to Andy Gray's commentary, and he was... I don't want to make this sound, you know, from Liverpool's point of view, but it said a lot about the game. That he picked Larsson as man of the match as well, or singled him out for.
My money would have been on Gareth Barry to be man of the match, just so Sky could talk to him.
Well, nice and solid Gareth Barry from that point of view, which must have been a tough game, you know, as a professional footballer to figure in. I was saying to Aldo at the game yesterday, there was a point in the pre-match warm-up where he was stood in the centre circle, just glaring into Liverpool's half. For about a minute and a half, stood there with Stylian Petrov, and he must have been thinking, I should have been stood there today being booed by this set of fans instead of being cheered by them.
What were the Liverpool fans singing? You should have signed for a big club or something.
Didn't need them sing anything, to be fair, yesterday. Xabi Alonso was involved, and they were singing a song to him as well, weren't they, saying your boss doesn't want you and stuff like that, the Villa fans. But he's becoming more and more influential for Liverpool as these weeks go by, isn't he?
Yeah, after the last sort of 18 months, he's not exactly, you know, his game hasn't been brilliant, so not like it was in that first season. The fans... certainly appreciate Xabi Alonso. You know, they've stated that case earlier. I think it was the Lazio game in pre-season, you know, and they were sort of telling Mr. Benitez where they could stick Gareth Barry. Was some of the cop were, some weren't. There seemed to be like a bit of a contestation between them, and, you know, it was getting a bit moody in parts. But the feeling there was that, you know, why sell Xabi Alonso and bring in Gareth Barry? I mean, Barry, he didn't set the world alight yesterday. And for me, he's a little bit one-dimensional. He's a bit one-paced. And I think on the ball... Xabi Alonso gives you probably more than what Gareth Barry might do. Okay, he's great at set pieces, Gareth Barry, but £80 million, I think it is a lot of money for almost like for like in that sense. But then again, as I said, I think Alonso is probably a better player. And it's a big 6 months for Alonso now up until January. I think he knew that basically the manager had said to him, you know, that we're going to have to move you on to bring somebody. And he said, Benitez said that he needs to buy English players and left-sided players without naming Gareth Barry. And that was his reasons for, you know, for trying to move Xabi Alonso on. Whether there's been a falling out, we don't know, but that is a suggestion that goes back to last season, I think, of the departure of Paco Ayestarán. And I know Xabi Alonso was close to Paco, and but at the end of the day, he's still a Liverpool player, and he's got a lot to prove now as well. It was interesting in the summer that you think if he was going to move on, he'd want to go back to Spain, and no Spanish clubs came in for him. Nowhere he wanted to go anyway. So whether he stays at Liverpool, whether he wants to move on, he's going to have to keep playing well and playing better than he has been for the last 18 months to either secure a move to a club he might want to play for. He didn't want to go to Italy. That was quite clear. So either win his place back and you know, win back the sort of win himself back into Rafa's thinking, or, you know, try and secure a move elsewhere.
What did you make, all of you, of the handshake? We gave us something to talk about prior to the game. It was nonsense in the end, wasn't it? But yeah, it was even so.
One for the cameras, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with us here.
Marched straight over and big, strong. Who's the strongest handshake was probably a more worthy thing of talking about. Do you think that the respect issue that we've heard so much about over the last couple of weeks played a part in that? Maybe, you know, a couple of intermediates getting involved and saying, listen, you need to shake hands before the game.
No, two of them just needed to be man enough to do so, you know, put it behind them.
Are we making too much of it, though? Was there ever any problem between the two managers?
Well, clearly it is, because Benitez said at his press conference last week, didn't he? Said it to on Sky. He said, I think the question was something like, do you expect to be friends with him now, or something? He says, I don't think so. Or something, not do you expect to be friends, but his answer was, I don't think so, or does he like you, or something. But
I don't think he's overly bothered, is he, by which managers like him, which not managers dislike him. I said to him after the game yesterday, are you going to go and share a glass of wine now? And he quick as a flash,
I don't drink wine.
It was a good answer, I suppose.
I do.
On the positive side of things, Andrea De Sena, who's taken a lot of stick over the first couple of weeks, and people very, very quick to judge him, put some decent crosses in for Liverpool yesterday. He was probably one of their better players.
He did, yeah. Where that width is lacking, he was overlapping at times and, you know, getting down the wing. And he looked quick as well. He looked a lot quicker yesterday than I've seen. So maybe it's just a case of fitness with him and him adapting from La Liga to the Premier League. He was one of Liverpool's better performers yesterday, definitely. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, what was he, £8 million, something. But he was one of the best players, apparently, in Italy last season. One of the best defenders in Italy, anyway. Quite an attack-minded player, we're told. And we started to see signs of that yesterday. Defensively, didn't really have that much to do. Not as much as, say, Arbeloa on the other side. I also thought he had a good game because he kept Ashley Young quiet. Ashley Young is probably one of their more dangerous players. Villa, he's already got about 5 or 6 assists already this season. I think it's a saying, yeah, there's more to come from him. I hope so, because you were wondering in pre-season and early season, you know, what have we got here? Yeah. We sold Reece, and then it looked like we just signed another Reece without the free kick. But there were positive signs from De Sena yesterday.
I think he just looks a little bit ungainly, doesn't he? And people judge him and say he's not fit enough maybe for this level. But yeah, I was impressed with him yesterday.
I just think that with him, if he was really that good, I know he has been capped by Italy, but if he is that good, then he should have gone to the European Championships with them.
Yeah, there was talk.
That's the one thing that you just wonder if he is top class.
Yeah, there was Zambrotta. They took Zambrotta and Grosso as well, didn't they? So two World Cup winners at the end of the day. But he is 26.
Yeah, he should be in the prime of his career, really, shouldn't he?
Why is it taking him so long to, you know, to get to international level? He's played for smaller clubs in Italy before, so whether they're unfashionable clubs. Yeah. But at the end of the day, if you're good enough, you should be playing for your country.
Daniel Agger's situation confuses me a little bit. You know, they waited so long for him to come back. Rafa was so outspoken about, you know, this is how much we've missed him. We'd have been so much closer to the title had he been fit to play, and he looked not too happy yesterday to be on the bench again.
Yeah, I think you go back to the first leg against Standard Liège, and Agger, he didn't look confident, he didn't look his usual self, he didn't look comfortable on the ball, instead of bringing it out like he does, he likes to play it out of the defence. It was some Sunday League stuff from him, to be fair. He was hitting it long quite a lot, and just giving Liège possession back, and he's not played since then. Meanwhile, I think it was at Sunderland, wasn't it? It was the next game, and Rafa's played Sammy Hippier next to Carra. Since then, it's been Skirtle, and on current form, Skirtle's, you know, he's been fantastic. He was possibly, again, our best player against Liège last week. There weren't too many, but it was a good physical battle that game for Liverpool, and Skirtle was certainly up to the test. So I think Skirtle's in on merit at the moment, but Agger's been out for a long time, you know, and he hasn't rediscovered that form. So it's about points. It's about getting into the Champions League, and you know, obviously getting points on the table in the league. So whether Rafa's not quite confident with him at the moment, but if Skirtle keeps playing the way he is, it's going to be difficult to dislodge him.
Aldo picked Xabi Alonso as his man of the match. Would you go along with that? Most influential of yesterday,
Mascherano. I think he caught my eye the most. I think Xabi was, yeah, he was steady. And, you know, maybe Mascherano gives him that freedom. But I just think just on the ground, covered, you know, Mascherano, he was everywhere for Liverpool yesterday. I thought he was, you know, he was sort of tough in the tackle again. And there was one run in the second half, fantastic. He picked it up on the edge of his own box, went bombing down the wing, but it was just his pass let him down.
He tracked back in the same vein as well, didn't he, on a couple of occasions to put challenges in as well to that effect. So.
Yeah, showed how much they missed him. Just very quickly, reaction to the Champions League draw, which we just missed from last week's edition. Were you fairly happy with that?
Yeah.
Happy to be in it, I suppose.
Happy to be in it, yeah. Sort of pinching yourself, weren't you, Thursday morning to make sure we were still in it. PSV Eindhoven, Marseille again. So we know all about them. Of course, it was Marseille that beat Liverpool last year. You know, it was a slow start to the Champions League last year, and Marseille were one of the teams that got the better of Liverpool. So hopefully they've learned from that. Atletico Madrid, that's the big talking point, isn't it? That's, you know, obviously Fernando Torres returning to his old club. I think they're going to be the most difficult opponents in that group, Dave, which they're in. As I say, Liverpool know enough about PSV. We played them a couple of times. We played them in the knockout stage, actually, didn't we? I
think it was getting boring,
four
times.
Isn't it? I was just going to say that. There's only one group.
And Manchester
in the Champions
United
League.
Celtic again. It is, honestly, getting boring.
There's only one group that really, like, sort of captured your imagination, and that was Zenit.
Juventus
and Real Madrid. You've seen all these things before.
Definitely.
Celtic against Man U, yeah, we've seen that. Chelsea have got their nice little stroll through to the next round.
Exactly, yeah. And Arsenal go to Eastern Europe.
Again.
Just very quickly on that Atletico Madrid point, some quotes from Pepe Reina that were spotted earlier on in the week, him saying that, you know, he wants to join them sooner rather than later, although he sees himself at Liverpool for a couple of years. Have they been stood up, those quotes, at all, or has he had anything to say about them?
I've asked, he's been continually linked with Atletico while he's been at Liverpool, and he told me it goes back to his dad. I think his dad played for them, and there's always been that strong family link with the Reiners and Atletico Madrid, and they've courted him, you know, a couple of times over the last few seasons. But he said he's happy at Liverpool now, you know. But he did say that one day maybe he would like to play for them.
He was 26 yesterday, wasn't he?
Tell you what, that would be a major worry if he was to want to join them any time in the next 8-9 years for the way he's playing at the moment. But we'll talk about two former Liverpool goalkeepers that are doing particularly well, particularly against Merseyside teams, as we go on to talk about Everton and their defeat to Portsmouth and the ramifications maybe of that as well for the Blues. Dave Randalls of the LFC magazine was the voice you heard in the majority there, talking about his team, the Reds. Dominic King of the Liverpool Echo, who's Blue through and through, as is Alan Irwin of City Sport, will be dissecting the Everton result from the weekend just after the break on Press Gang.
The Monday Night Press Gang on City Talk 105.9.
To find others who share my passion.
To study for pleasure.
To learn for leisure.
To take it to the next level.
To really feel I have achieved something.
To discover a life with more meaning.
That's why I chose Liverpool Hope University.
From music to history, study for the love of the subject. Find out about full and part-time courses at the Liverpool Hope Postgraduate Open Day, Thursday, September the 4th.
Click hope.ac.uk to find out more.
Elegance, excitement, anticipation. Feel the rush of the races. The 2008 racing season is underway at Chester Racecourse. With a Dee Festival badge, you can enjoy the racing at Chester's sister racecourse at Bangor-on-Dee as well. 2 days of racing, jump and flat, all for just £35. Gain access to Bangor-on-Dee's paddock enclosure on Friday, September the 12th, and then Chester's County Concourse stand on September the 13th. To secure your tickets, call 01244 304 610 or click chester-races.com. Chester Racecourse. Feel the rush. Offer conditions apply.
Your choice of legends in the evening on City Talk 105.9. City Sport, including legends John Aldridge.
It's Johnny Aldridge again. 2-1.
Ian St. John. Ian Snowden. And new signing Graham Sharp.
What a goal by Graham Sharp. An important one for Everton.
FC drives you home on Radio City 96.7 on Magic 1548. The legends of the 60s, 70s and more. Your only choice of legends in the evening. Radio City, Magic and City Talk 105.9. The Monday Night Press Gang on City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the Press Gang. Peter McDowell here in the company of Dave Randalls of the LFC magazine. Just talking about Liverpool's results against Villa yesterday. It was a very quick part of you just joining us. Not much to talk about.
Didn't feel quick.
Liverpool's point of
just lasted a quarter of an hour.
Dave can sit back now and enjoy the other two lads dissecting Everton's result from Saturday. Alan Irwin of City Sport and Dominic King of the Liverpool Echo. Who wants to go first?
Thanks,
should we
Dom.
Draw straws? Yeah. I'll go first.
I always knew it was going to be a difficult game, Peter. The West Brom result was never going to mask really the problems that Everton have got in terms of numbers. None of the new signings were available. Jakobsen was on the bench, but you know he hasn't played a game for you know how many months. Didn't expect him to start. International football, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Your research, Alan.
Seven league games last season is not good, is it? Six starts. always knew it was going to be a difficult game because Port's such a big, strong side and Everton's, defensive inadequacies were exposed, massively exposed, unfortunately. I thought Everton played reasonably well and created chances, but defensively, they were awful. Away from defence, midfield and getting forward, the game could have been so different. As David Moyes said afterwards, there were turning points in the game. There were big chances, the one Arteta off the post, if that had gone in, getting back on level terms, etc. But that is football, isn't it? All ifs, buts and maybes. Overall, I think we all probably expected that Everton were going to struggle to beat a Portsmouth side that had lost themselves their previous games, but to very good sides. It's going to be difficult from now on in because Mr. Moyes has got 2 weeks to mull over that defeat and put things right.
Hopefully put things right, yeah. What did you think, Dom?
Well, the worrying thing is that it was an improvement. It was a big improvement against Blackburn, but they never looked like winning. I know there was the couple of chances, but they were real half chances.
Somebody else just signed for us.
I don't know. There's just something really wrong at the minute. There's just there's so much. So it seems so much. You know, the lack of transfer activity. It's been an unsettling summer. I think it's started to seep through to the players now.
And
the fact is, you know, the big players that you could have relied on last year are now underperforming. You know, Julian Lescott, Joseph Yobo.
These are the ones that are letting us down, and Moyes has, you know, come out and said that, didn't he, after the game. It's not, you know, the young lads, really. It's you know, the experienced pros that are struggling at the moment.
Sharpie had said as much, hadn't he, prior to the game, that he felt that Lescott was better as a left-back, and then it proved that partnership, you know, between the two centre-halves is not quite happening this year.
Well, they don't talk, you know, and neither of them are what you call, like, big screamers, leaders, you know, think of the way Alan Stubbs was if things were going wrong. Mm. Everybody on the pitch would know it, and everybody in the stands would know that he wasn't happy because he'd scream at them, but you never see
too quiet.
Joseph Yobo and Julian Lescott doing that. I think Phil Jagielka's got the scope to do that. He's a bit of an organiser and a leader because he was captain of Sheffield United. And I really wouldn't be surprised if he was there for the game against them.
Julian Lescott just doesn't seem to. I mean, great player that he is. He doesn't seem to read the game the same from that centre back position as he does when he's playing at left back. Mm. He's just left exposed on far too many occasions with the particularly long balls.
Mm. I think the worrying thing from Saturday was David Moyes' quote afterwards when I don't know whether he'd said it to you, but he said it to the written press. We're not ready to win Premier League games.
We are not equipped to win any Premier League game yet, and that, to me,
what just, do you read into
that's
that?
That's awful.
Well, it's frightening, really. I mean, why not? You know, they've been back in training since July the 3rd. There can be any number of reasons, and I've made a couple of points in my match report tonight. There's two ways of looking at it. He wasn't given enough money, or he wasn't told about what funds he had at the end of last season when he had his plans. Or he's just dillied and dallied too long about who he wanted to bring in.
And now, you know, we were talking about four players being signed at the weekend. Abena will not be an Everton player because he can't get a work permit.
Which is ridiculous, the criteria that they've said.
Well, shouldn't they have known that he wasn't going to get a work permit, though?
Surely they knew at the outset that it was going to cause a problem. When David Moyes was posed the question on Friday, by the media in the pre-match press conference, and he categorically stated, "Oh, we've got four players. I am including Obina." Well, it was never going to be the case, wasn't it? A done deal. Sahar's a done deal now, but.
It smacks as a bit of an amateur setup, and that is the main criticism of Everton fans at the moment. They don't know what's going on. Do the actual people in charge know what's going on half the time? The manager included in that.
It's a question for them to answer. I'm not ducking it, but you know what I mean. Mm. There's obviously there's things that we're not privy to at a football club, and you know I think you said that a couple of weeks ago. Nor should we be, but I don't know. But is there a time like this when you think, you know, a sporting director might be needed?
Well, the longer it goes on, though, Dom, I mean, I'm getting to the stage now, okay, it's only three games in, but the players are playing with that fear within them now, and that becomes a very difficult problem to escape from.
Mm. Yeah, and you could sense it in the crowd as well.
Yeah.
And there's going to come a point, you know, thank goodness there's, you know, another 3 weeks before they've got a league match at home, and they could get a couple of results against Stoke and Hull to give a bit more confidence. Mm. Settle nerves a bit, but if they go into the derby on the back of a two bad results, then the anxiety in the stands they're not going to have any margin for error. The first couple of mistakes are going to be seized upon. It was on Saturday. Phil Neville gave the ball away early on, and you could almost sense that people were getting ready. Now Phil was one of the better performers on Saturday, and he has been the only one who's probably got anywhere near his best in these three games.
That is the real test for players at that stage, though, isn't it? When the crowd are ready to get on the back and they're still showing and making themselves available to take the ball.
Well, this is where the experienced seasoned pros have got to stand up and be counted and bring the younger, inexperienced ones through, haven't they? And David Moyes is saying that these lads aren't performing at the moment. So, you know, where do we begin to turn it round?
Quite a lot of the Sunday papers picked up on the issue of, you know, each goal that Portsmouth scored was greeted just by silence. You know, it was almost like the depression deepened every time Portsmouth did something.
It was apathy more than anything, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like sort of resigned. I mean, I've been...
expectation.
I've seen Goodison erupt a few times when goals have gone, you know, real anger, but this time it was like... We knew that was coming.
Was that the feeling prior to the game? Not only in the press box, but around the place, that it was going to be a real struggle for
them? I did think the opening day they'd lose against Blackburn. I wasn't quite so sure this time. But the way the game started off, once Defoe put them in front...
Which was an awful goal defensively.
Well, he had five players around him. Yeah. David Moyes said to us, he said, you can't take something like that. It was just too bad to stomach. But I know Arteta had a shot that was saved against the post and there was the penalty, but they never really looked like threatening.
I thought the atmosphere would have been better on Saturday due to the fact that, you know, a couple of signings have been made. It just would have lifted and buoyed a few people.
But they weren't signings that, you know, thought everyone, we've got him.
Yeah.
You know, if they'd signed Moutinho in the week before and then the place should have been jumping. But I'm sorry, with the greatest respect to them.
I still worry that David Moyes hasn't signed his contract yet. The longer this situation prevails, you know, the more worried I become.
Well, he's not as buoyant as you might want him to be as an Evertonian, is he?
Buoyant.
I
thought that's what you said.
But, you know, as a set of fans and also as a set of players, because they're very similar, aren't they? They want the manager to show certain signs in press conferences, even if he's saying something completely different to them afterwards. I think he kept you guys waiting for quite a while to come out.
He did, but he was better than I expected him to be once he did come out, and it was almost 6 o'clock by the time we got to talk to him. OK, so he's had a chance to look at a few things again, and he's had a chance probably to calm himself down a little, and he was a bit more rational in what he said, really. You know, we were able to ask him questions about the defence and, you know, would he make changes and go back to what was successful last season. He said he couldn't at the moment because he didn't have the personnel. Well, I disagree with that. Why couldn't he? Why can't not? He played Jagielka at centre-back alongside Yobo, Lescott at left-back, still have Neville at right-back, or even change the right-back if he wanted to put Neville in midfield where Jagielka has been.
Well, then you can put Jakobsen in there.
Yeah, you can put now. So I disagreed with what he said. He said he was having to play players in those positions. That's all he had. Well,
yeah. Well, you know, he has had money to spend during the summer. That's the thing. Now, if he's missed out on the really big targets that he wanted, well, you know, it's a shame. You know, there's things in life that we all want that we can't get. But as the manager of a football club, you've got to cut your cloth accordingly sometimes, haven't you?
Is the whole impact of maybe how the back four's perform in the midfield having an impact on the goalkeeper?
Yeah. I don't think Tim Howard's done much wrong.
No, he hasn't, actually. In fact, I thought he was very steady last week at West Brom. he didn't have a chance on any of the goals, really, no. Did he, on Saturday, to be honest with you?
No.
Because that sometimes is a knock-on effect, isn't it? The keeper or the back four become a little bit nervous.
It's usually if the keeper comes nervous, then the back four become nervous. But, I mean, Tim Howard's been terrific since he's been here.
He made one excellent save, didn't he, as well, from Defoe.
Talk to me about the penalty, because was there a bit of an argument between him and Arteta as to who was going to take it?
I don't understand why Arteta never took it, but Yakubu was never, ever, ever going to score. He took a penalty that was similar like that against Everton 2 years ago at the Riverside.
Yeah, and saved by Tim Howard, yeah. He always takes his penalties like that.
Because he hadn't played well, has he? Was that the issue you go
I thought he did okay. You know,
outside of the box, though, Dom. He played like a player off the front man. He was outside of the box for the vast majority of the game.
Well, that's the service to him, though.
I don't know whether he was playing under instructions, Dom, but he shouldn't have been playing half the time where he was.
But Alan, he's got a central defender and a young kid trying to, you know, with the greatest respect to them, they're not going to be threading the kind of balls through that he wants.
But he was putting crosses in.
Well, it just adds to the disarray, doesn't it? Mm. I actually thought he did okay.
But
he was never going to score that penalty because his body language was all wrong.
Should have been lashed down there.
Well, James Warner, I think, was making that point to him. And you've seen on the TV pictures, he was sort of having a go as the camera panned across. Why didn't you? Mm. And then we lost sight of what he was saying. But he's probably saying the same thing. Well, he just welted down the middle. Mm. But not to be. Yakubu's not going to be on the next penalty, is he? If they get one?
I wouldn't have thought so. It'd be Arteta. I would hope.
Not had much fun with penalties, have we? No. Andy Johnson.
Somebody was telling us that missed the last five that have been awarded down at the Gladys Street. They've missed four.
Terrible. Yeah, it was only the one last game of the season, wasn't it, that was scored?
Of the two young lads that you have available to you alongside Yakubu at the moment, which is the better equipped, do you think, to start games?
Are you going Vaughan or Anichebe?
I'd go James Vaughan, but he's not fit.
He's not fit.
And you don't want to overface him too soon, given his past record. Mm. Anichebe, I don't know. I think he needs to get back to 4-5-1, but has he got the personnel to do it?
Sooner Cahill's fit, the better.
Yeah, it'd be like a new signing all over again. Talk to me about a new signing in Lewis Sahar. Will he go straight in? Will he be ready to go straight in?
Well, he'll play if he's fit. He has to play.
I still think he's got it. He's missed a bit of pre-season. As I'm told from someone in Manchester, he's missed a bit of pre-season with a calf problem. So if he's had no games, then it's going to take him a while to get up to full speed. So I wouldn't think he's going to be pitched in straight away. Might be 2-3 weeks, maybe.
What was your reaction to the signing?
I think he's a cracking signing if they can keep him fit.
His goal scoring record is brilliant.
Mm. Excellent. Remember him playing for United against Chelsea last year, and he absolutely terrorised John Terry. So he's definitely got all the tools to be top class. But is it up in his head keeping him fit?
Well, he's 30 now, isn't he? So he's not going to have the same pace that he had a number of years ago. But as Sharpie said to me on Saturday, and he would, it's not all about pace, Al.
No, he would say that. But you know, you've got to credit the player. He's left Manchester United. It might have been quite easy for him to sit a little bit longer there. He's coming as we're led to believe a pay as you play deal. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's right, yeah. I don't think he's, by all accounts, he's hungry and wants to prove himself, which augurs well, because looking at his goals record, I think he averages one every two and a bit games.
Is that better than Solskjaer off the bench, that ratio?
I'm not talking off the bench, I'm talking
in general. Starts, yeah. Or overall. I mean, when he was at Fulham, he was 1-2. Mm. He's actually 1-3 at United in his total record, so... You know, it's not bad, is it?
You know, you've got to credit players like that, though, who just decide that, you know, maybe it's time for me to go out and prove something. I was desperate for Solskjaer to join another club, just to prove that he could do it week in, week out, which there was a bit of a question mark over him, wasn't there, from that point of view?
Yeah, I think it was injuries, wasn't it, with Solskjaer as well. You know, he seemed to be happy to stay and sit and come off the bench, you know, and Sahar has moved on, you know, for that reason, whereas... I think it's a good signing for Everton. As you say, every Evertonian you speak to, if we can keep him fit, if we can get him fit. I think you've got to get him fit in the first place. He's missed a lot of football. When a player comes back from so many injuries at his age as well, he could struggle. But then he's an intelligent player as well, so it might not be about pace with him. Mm. You know, it's his movements inside the box and that. Some sort of Evertonian mates I spoke to as well, they think that it'd be a good fall for Yakubu as well. Yeah. You've got the brawn and the muscle of Yakubu, and then you've got the intelligence of Sahar. Mm. But it is that if you can get him fit.
Well, David Moyes was saying to us on Friday that if he can get him on the pitch for 20 games a year, then Everton have got a real chance of winning 20 games. which tells you what he thinks of him as a striker.
That's progress for them. I can remember them terrorising things. They got 100 points when he was at Fulham in the Championship when they went up, and they just walked it, and that was probably the most consistent, you know, number of games he played in, which was quite a few years ago now.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I mean, you don't spend 4 years at Man United if you're a dud,
no,
do you?
And Sir Alex Ferguson doesn't often get it wrong, does he? So, no, is it get him fit, and he'll do the business.
And as Mark Hughes is saying, we'll move on to talk about Sean Wright Phillips a bit later on, he's saying, you know, not only has it been a good deal from a financial point of view, we're getting a better player now than the one we sold. So, possibly Everton getting a better player than the one they bought from Fulham all those years ago. Because he's played at Man United and he's trained and played with better players.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Every reason to think that. But I think Sean Wright Phillips would have been a great addition if he'd have come here. It was just, unfortunately, it was financial demands.
I think you speak to any football fan in the Premiership, they're all saying the same thing. He would have been a good addition for us. He scored twice at the weekend, but a good player anyway. But we'll talk about him a little bit later on. Talk to me about the draw, Standard Liège, because they gave Liverpool a bit of a...
I heard all this moaning and groaning in the office when the draw was made on Friday. It's like, why? Just because, you know, Liverpool struggled past them. Liverpool didn't play well in two games against them. Everton on form would have no problem, I don't think.
Well, if we go back to last year's European form, Dom, I'm not sure at the moment.
If you start thinking, oh, why have we got them? You're half bottom.
Well, exactly, yeah.
So you can't, you know, they can't be thinking like that.
Because Rafa said, didn't he, Dave, that they were 150%, you know, of their normal game, Standard Liège. He said every report we got back to say that they wouldn't be too hard a test for Liverpool to get past.
Yeah, if they're 150% the normal game in both games, is that 300%? Because they played the same in both games. They're a good, strong physical side, and I think a lot of people didn't give Liège the credit they deserved coming into the game, coming into both games, actually. I mean, after the first leg, Liverpool should have learned the lesson. They knew what they were going to get in the second leg, and they were still, you know, second to a lot of second balls. They weren't winning things in midfield, and Liège could have easily scored a couple first half. It wasn't for Reina at Anfield last week.
There were a couple of set plays early on. I think he made one save, didn't he, Dan?
Yeah, there was one. He's just tipped it around the post.
But, other than that, I don't think they created much in another 80 minutes other than a little flurry of corners or something. For Everton, you know, work so hard to get another crack at Europe. You don't want to be thinking, oh,
Let's remember, Everton beat Zenit St. Petersburg last season in Europe by 0-0 at Goodison Park, and they end up winning the competition. And now, you know, rave reviews about them, about taking the Champions League by storm. David Moyes said all along they were a quality side, but Everton beat quality sides all along last season in Europe, so they are capable of doing it again. But we've got to be up for it. We've got to be in the right frame of mind again. And the game comes quickly in September between the Stoke City and Hull City game, at the first leg of Goodison.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And then derby match between the other one.
Could be a nice link for us, because I want to talk to you about a potential shared stadium in part three.
Oh, thanks.
You're all looking forward to that, aren't you?
Yeah, good.
It was the big issue today on City Talk 105.9. We'll get the lads' views on whether it's still a goer. And also a big day for Manchester City, how envious Liverpool fans are looking on to think, wish it was that easy for us at the moment. You're tuned in to Press Gang. We'll be back with the lads very soon on City Talk 105.9.
The Monday Night Press Gang on City Talk 105.9.
Get in touch with the voice of Liverpool. Phone us.
Local rate on 0151 708 1059.
Text us.
By texting talk, then a space, then your message to 61025.
Text costs 25 pence plus your standard network rate.
If it's ever going to cost you more, we'll tell you.
Email us via the website
at citytalk.fm
or write to citytalk 105.9
St John's Beacon, 1 Horton Street, L1 1RL.
Citytalk
105.9.
Thanks to the Merseyside and West Lancs Lifelong Learning Network,
you can study for a university foundation degree at your local college. You can study full or part-time, and the job you're doing now could count towards a qualification you choose.
From leisure and tourism to theatre, drama and creativity. To find out about courses for September 2008, call 0800 195 5063.
The Lifelong Learning Network. Learn for the life you want tomorrow around the life you live today.
A swift business story. Dave's got business documents to sign, and Dave's documents are on the desk in his office in Bootle, but Dave's away doing business in Derby. Thanks to a swift dispatch same-day delivery, Dave can do business in two places at once.
When it comes to business-to-business deliveries, Swift Dispatch is quick, reliable and secure. Call 0845 241 6666 now or visit swiftdispatch.com. Swift Dispatch, the award-winning courier service you can rely on.
My dad's van's better than your dad's van.
Well, my dad's is blue.
My dad's van's a Fit Scooter, International Van of the Year 2008. Now with an improved 120,000-mile third-year dealer warranty like all Fiat vans. And finance offers start from $29.99 per week.
Mum! Fiat Professional, commercial vehicles built on years of experience. Text Fiat vans to 8800 or visit fiatprofessional.co.uk/range.
My dad's van's better off by miles.
Business users only, initial rental required, payable in monthly instalments, exclusive of VAT.
Under the Data Protection Act, your company could be at risk if you don't dispose of personal information securely. If your business deals with confidential information, you need Planet Recycling. As one of the Northwest's largest data destruction providers, Planet are fully licensed to shred and dispose of data securely and cost-effectively. Is your company protected? For a free survey, call 0151 922 6668 or click planetrecycling.co.uk.
The Monday Night Press Gang on City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the Press Gang. We've already dissected the weekend that was for Liverpool and Everton with Dave Randalls of the LFC magazine, Alan Irwin of City Sport, and also Dominic King of the Liverpool Echo. Join me, Peter McDowell, in the studio tonight. You probably heard it, or you were watching it on TV earlier on this afternoon. It just flashed across the screen, saying Man City have been taken over. Simple as that. No speculation. Happened. They've bought the club.
Lock, stock and barrel.
I mean, for you, Dom, you worked in that part of the world for a long time, so you'll still have lots of contacts in Manchester. How's that been viewed today?
It's an amazing story as well, particularly that, you know, they bid for Berbatov straight away as well, which and, you know, they may say they want to be in the top four this year. It's terrific. Terrific story, I think.
And of what they know about the guy that heads up the business as well, I mean, they're basically saying that, you know, Roman Abramovich's wealth is nothing compared to this guy. And his knowledge of football as well is at the level it should be for a chairman taking over a club. So it can only be good.
Well, it sounds like Nirvana, that, doesn't it? It's like, you know, absolutely perfect. You know, we've got a rich man who knows about football to take us over.
Did Mark Hughes know this when he went?
Yeah. But, you know, it's gone from one end of the scale to the other for City, hasn't it? Because their fans, a couple of weeks ago, I think, what's happening next here with Shinawatra? You know, Mark Hughes got a good manager. Is he going to stay for the long haul? Then they signed Sean Wright Phillips, and then this happens.
It's come totally out of the blue, hasn't it? There is still the process of due diligence to go through, so I don't think the takeover's complete just yet. And there's talk that Shinawatra wants to be kept on as honorary life president. I think they've the Abu Dhabi. Yeah. They've said they will keep him on as life president. But there's that element of, do you keep the old part of the old regime on? You know, because Shinawatra came in and it's all gone, you know, sort of belly up for him. You know, in a very sort of short space of time. It's Man City, there's got to be a catch.
That's what the fans thinking, will be thinking as well.
There's got to be a catch.
Everyone is thinking the same thing, I think. But from your point of view, Dom, are you fairly confident that it will be all right at City now?
I think so, yeah. Well, as you can imagine, I haven't been able to speak to my good mate who covers them today, because his phone, every time you tried to ring him, has been straight through to voicemail, and he hasn't got back to me. So it's, I think there won't be too many problems there.
Happy enough, Al?
Yeah, I think everything at Manchester City, you know, you sometimes raise an eyebrow, don't you? And that the fans will say, you know, they never do things the simple way. It is a surprise. But I think the many people's, you know, second favourite club, aren't they, really, in that respect? Primarily because they're never seen as a threat, I suppose.
Yeah. They were a great club to be involved with and cover, you know. I mean, even when they were in the first division, there was always a story because Keegan was there, and that year they just absolutely waltzed away with the first division with the football that they played, and he was terrific to deal with. And the fans are always, like, you know, the self-deprecating, the humour that they've got, you know. I'd like to see City do well.
Yeah, so would I.
Mark Hughes, I mean, added pressure when a new owner takes over instantly, isn't there?
Mark Hughes is a good manager. I think he'll do really, really well there. I mean, obviously the first couple of results when they were beaten by the Danes in the UEFA Cup at home, and they'd lost at Aston Villa, you could see that there was unsettling things going on behind. But now it seems as he's bought a few players in, he knows what's going on, he knows what money he's got to deal with.
He's lost.
He's got the, you know, an equilibrium there now, and I think they'll do really, really well this season, Man City.
Hasn't he? He's lost the big lad today.
Chalupa,
hasn't he?
Yeah, but he's bought two in as well, so...
Nice.
Liverpool fans will be slightly down. I think there was lots of them getting in touch with TV stations today saying, if only it was us this time. And
well, what about Everton fans as well?
Well, exactly, yeah. Which maybe leads us on to talk about the stadiums. It was the big issue on City Talk 105.9 from this morning. You all will have an impression as to how you would have voted had we let you. Where would you have gone, Al?
Well, common sense prevails with me because I'm that type of chap, and I've always been down the shared stadium route, which many Evertonians are against, many Liverpoolians are against. But you know, it is the common sense financial way to, you know, to keep both clubs very, very much alive and kicking, I think. And Liverpool fans will say that Everton are just there on the back of that. Mm. And probably, you know, given their success over the past 20 years, then I would probably be able to see where they're coming from. But I still think it's an avenue worth exploring.
It's just so fed up with it now, to be honest. It seems it's back on the agenda, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
The shared stadium. Just waiting for Councillor Warren Bradley to come out and say, let's have a shared stadium. But
He's done that today.
Yeah, has he done it already? Mm. Yeah. He's always pioneered, you know, that idea.
You can't blame him from his, you know, position in the council,
Well, so now he's not going to get that plot of land that he promised for Everton to keep them in the city. Oh, we'll share a stadium.
Can it work? That's the question. Of course, with a shared stadium, you know, you're gonna. I went to the San Siro last season for Liverpool's game against Inter Milan, and it seems to work, you know, okay there. That's a council-owned stadium, of course, but there's no identity. It's a fantastic stadium. There's no identity there, you know. So you go to Goodison, you know, instantly it's Everton's ground. Liverpool's Anfield's the same. You would be looking at probably a big, great concrete bowl with very little identity. There's been talk in the past about...
not necessarily. Look, San Siro was built, you know. It was remodified, wasn't it, for the 1990 World Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, 20 years on, surely there's architects out there that could put a stamp on for both clubs.
Well, have you been outside the Emirates Stadium and seen how much grey concrete there is there?
Yeah, this new stadiums are just, they're all pretty much the same. I mean, I went to Wembley at the back end of last season, and that was just a big Emirates for me. You know, Liverpool's a very parochial city, and that's shown by the football clubs. And,
yeah.
You know, we do like to latch on to our identity. We're proud of our identity, our history, our heritage, and there's a case of whether some of that would be lost. But then, you know, do you draw a line under the past and just move on to the future? And that, I think if you did go for a shared stadium, in some ways you would be doing that. The whole element as well of whose end is whose. You know, at the San Siro, the Inter fans sit on the Curva Nord and the AC fans on the Curva Sud or the other way around, you know, so there's that element as well.
Yeah, there's the Allianz Arena, isn't there, in Munich
can change colour.
There's ways and means around everything. I personally think a shared stadium's a good idea. Why should both clubs mortgage themselves, you know, money that's not there, borrowing, particularly in this current climate, and risk the futures when there's, you know, a massive plot of land central to where the two grounds currently are. There's plenty of scope. You know, yes, I can understand the arguments for, you know, keeping your own identity and all that, but we're in the 21st century now. You've got to be a little bit more forward-thinking and understand some of the arguments, you know, because if you stay rooted in the past, then people are just going to overtake you.
The architect was interviewed in one of the Sundays over the weekend of behind the Emirates Stadium and saying, you know, when we did it in 2006, we already thought then that we were massively behind it, and we always thought it was a big risk to be able to borrow the kind of money that we were talking about. If we were in Liverpool or Everton's situation now, we'd be slightly panic-stricken as to whether we could pull it off and pull a decent, you know, design off as well at the same time.
You mean for single stadiums?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. It's escalating day by day, isn't it, Pete? Mm. So, you know, at some stage it's going to get to the stage where we probably are going to be priced away from it. So, you know, in terms of is it going to bring success to the football clubs through a shared stadium route? Well, we've got more chance of it.
Mm.
It's what comes first, the chicken or the egg, you know what I mean? Mm. The success on the pitch, do you get that right first? You talk to a lot of Liverpool fans and say, well, let's get it right on the pitch first and, you know, maybe just throw another 10,000 seats on Anfield. You know, there are parts of Anfield you could redevelop if you go up. Do Liverpool really need this big stadium. And as for Everton, they're not filling Goodison.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, 34,000 on Saturday.
Yeah, they're still trying to sell season tickets at the moment, aren't they, Everton? Yeah. You know, so are they going to fill a 60,000 capacity seater stadium? You know, do you really need to move? I think that there's more issues around Goodison, that it's a state of disrepair. Really, it's not the capacity
there's no scope to make you know.
No scope either for extra leg room in the press boxes. Oh.
Don't go there.
I tell you what, Aston Villa's press boxes, you were telling me on Sunday morning, has moved.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. They've changed it, Dom, apparently.
It's online with the 18-yard box now. Yeah. But there's probably similar leg room to Goodison Park there now as well, which you'd be pleased to hear from when you
go. Well, Villa used to be the best in the Premier League in terms of the position it was in and the room that you had as well. Oh, they've sold those seats to, you know, corporates, yeah. Yeah, and move the press box.
We're only the press, aren't we?
Absolutely, and that's the way it should be.
Exactly.
As well. Just a couple of other issues to talk about. The Old Firm derby. I was driving down to Villa and saying to Aldo, there'll be a couple of sendings off and a fight in that game. And, you know, ironic as though it is, both reduced to 10 men. Neil Lennon, the Celtic coach, gets assaulted on a night out in Glasgow.
Dear me.
You know, what
goals.
Is it about that place? Mm.
And yet they play each other about four or five times a season, don't they? It's they should be used to it by now.
Couple games as well.
Do you think they go for a shared stadium?
Should be pretty straightforward, that, shouldn't it?
No!
Chester and Tranmere. I was delighted to see Chester win the weekend.
Last, yeah.
That was always going to happen, though, wasn't
battered it? Battered them, didn't they? Barnett, five goals, yeah, fantastic. So pleased for Simon Davis and see whether they can take it from there. And Tranmere to come from behind as well. Thought, oh, here we go, writing's on the wall again. But changed his formation, and it worked.
4-3-3 to 4-4-2. Tried and tested. From Chester's point of view, is an interesting one for you. He's talking to Ryan Lowe, who scored twice for them at the weekend. Simon Davis, obviously a really young manager. The three senior players, Ryan Lowe, Kevin Ellison, Paul Linwood, who all scored at the weekend, pulled all the players in, aside from the manager, and they just added out as a group of players. And Ryan Lowe was saying, you know, the younger players need to learn to take a bit of criticism because they've never been used to it before, because that's the way you come through the youth system, isn't it? You lose a game, but, you know, you've taken these positives from the game. And he said, we just got in at an old-fashioned sort of slanging match and said, you're not doing this, you're not doing that.
Sunday league style.
And all of a sudden they beat Barnet 5-1, so maybe that is the tried and tested route of getting results when you need them. Match of the day, too, I really enjoyed last night. Chris Foy, our local referee, took a bit of a torrid bashing. Did you see that?
I didn't see match of the day, too.
It was unbelievable. The fouls that he let go. There was one, I think it was the one that Mark Hughes turned around and he just shouted, unbelievable.
Yeah, it was Andy Reid that clattered two right on the touchline, right, hadn't he? Not only were not fouls, they were probably both yellow card offences, weren't they?
But it was like the interview to Roy Keane afterwards, because Sunderland had been on the end of one of the horrific decisions and said, Roy, what did you think of that? I'm not making that as an excuse. Has the international break come at a good time? Yes, there's some people here that I don't want to see for a very, very long time.
it was the quote of the day, without a shadow of a doubt. I thought he was going to lay into the referee, but
I don't think he will.
I think he was bad for both teams, to be fair, yesterday. Did you have any interest in the England squad being named?
I thought Jimmy Pullard was an eye-opening one.
Deserve his place.
A few people have been pushing for Jimmy Pullard, actually. I don't think it's as much as a surprise as people have made out, really. Julian Lescott's a surprise because he's not been playing.
Yeah. Well, hang on. You know, different regimes have tried to get all, you know, the big names in and to get them to gel. What's wrong with getting somebody in who can actually play football? Yeah. You don't need the big names to win big games, if you know what I mean.
England, yeah.
No Liverpool players, you see.
Not really interested, to be honest. Yeah. But maybe Bullard's got the nod because of Gerrard's omission. You know, can he come in and do what Gerrard does? Gerrard doesn't really play great for England all the time, you know, and maybe give it to, you know, a better or a lesser-known player, less underrated player, and give him a chance, you know, see what happens. Michael Owen's omission, though, that's quite interesting. He's not made it, has he?
A lot of people made an awful lot of that today. England career over. I don't think that such a thing exists anymore, does it?
Wouldn't go that far, would you?
Ask Emil Heskey.
Yeah, back in the squad again. And Wigan, you know, battering their opposition at the weekend. So Jimmy Bullard, England's new number 10, or no?
He might get a run out against Andorra when it's 4-0.
Not Croatia.
How will you be spending your weekend then next weekend? Will you watch the game? Will you be dragged shopping?
As Andorra, England, I remember watching it last time, and that's getting boring as well, isn't it? And that was boring. It was awful.
I'd
like to fly away for the weekend somewhere, as there's no football to... Jet to commentate on. I'd like to, but my wife won't let me. It is my birthday this week as well, Pete. So,
If my wife's not listening, I'll be going to hate her for the Spring Cup.
I might join Kelsey, you,
Dom. Yeah, that sounds good, though. What about you, Dave?
No plans as yet. Not thought that far. It's only, you know, only Monday.
Oh, he's done his hamstring.
He's out for a month.
Hamstring, yeah.
7 to 10 days, he'll be all right.
Yeah, that's it. I'll get the treatment Torres gets, I'm sure, yeah. I won't be playing football, put it that way.
That's it. This team turned around, obviously. Rafa Benitez devastated and says he's going to have a scan. His team are made up. He's done his hamstring.
Well, we did lose 6-1 after I went off, so
It was only 5-1 when he went off.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining us tonight. I know it's been a really busy day for you. Probably will continue that way as well as you write up copy and whatever for tomorrow. So thank you for joining us. Alan Irwin of City Sport, Dave Randalls of the LFC Magazine, and Dominic King of the Liverpool Echo. Much appreciate your time tonight, gents.
Thank you.
Cheers. We continue next on.